You're listening to Community Radio, CKMS Radio Waterloo, 102.7, 946 on the Rogers Digital Network.
Happy Monday, Waterloo Region. It is the first Monday of October, October the 5th. You're listening to CKMS Community Connections. My name is Bob Jonkman. Today in the studio, we have David Marskell from The Museum, and we'll be speaking with him shortly. To start off with, though, here is Bano, My Time.
Working on left my family
listening to Banno, a Mississauga-based blues rock band. Dan Urbano wrote to us over a year ago and said, I'm reaching out to share the band's first three official digital releases, My Time, Danger Squirrel, which we're listening to now, and The Day You Die, since opening for Crownlands and Dirty Nil this year. Well, that would have been last year. From their bio, Toronto-based blues-influenced modern rock band Banno is a culmination of musical prowess, experienced songwriting, and professional recording. Brainchild of its founding member, Dan Urbano, the first Banno EP resulted from months of songwriting and tracking with fellow collaborator Evan Falcone, and they recruited the engineering talents of The Damn Truth, Dave Traina, and Derek Orsi, as well as Lacquer Channel's Phil Demetrio. Delivering this blistering but polished self-titled EP, and each of the five songs is catchier than the last. Keep listening to CKMS FM 102.7, and you'll hear lots more of Banno. In the studio today, we have David Marskell from the museum. Welcome, David.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. I got a hold of you through a press release, one of dozens of press releases that we receive here at CKMS FM. What is happening at the museum?
Well, there's never a dull moment, that's for sure, at the museum, and we are in good shape, considering everything that's going on around in the planet these days. We worked quickly back in March to as the revenue from the pie chart, if you will, the revenue from admissions and person visitors was eradicated. We began quickly to offer things online and off-site. So we've done very well in terms of engagements online, and we've had actually over 40,000 since March, different videos and live okay. things that we've had and collaborations and so on. So that's been very, very wonderful. We've got to learn how to monetize that a little bit more now. And then the off-site, again, I think we've taken some risks and we're not your normal not-for-profit. I think we do take a little more risk than others. And so we worked with the Canadian National Exhibition, who were closed for the year, to bring in the President's Choice Superdog Show as a drive-in, which took place out at Bingman's, their amphitheater bowl, which was very, very cool. Okay. And beginning this weekend, we will have a dinosaur drive-through, dinodrivethrough.ca, THRU, out at Bingman's, which will be there for a couple of weeks. So we're really, you know, we're trying to do things differently and stand our feet and keep swinging.
Not your typical museum offerings.
No, it's not. And, you know, we came from humble beginnings 17 years ago as a children's museum, and this community did so much to raise, I think it was $17 million, and reclaim what was Gowdy's department store. And it opened a huge fanfare, in part to, it was one piece of trying to reboot downtown Kitchener and so on. And it just didn't meet expectations right off the bat. So when I was brought in, a search firm brought me to the community and to the museum, I knew we had to rebrand. We had to we had an opportunity to market outside of the region, but just generally we had to expand our demographics and so on. So we don't have a collection. We're very unique in that way, and so we have to base our activity on experiences.
Yeah, but you have some permanent exhibits.
There's remnants of the Children's Museum, mostly, are the permanent interactive exhibits. They're not very interactive these days.
Yes.
We've taken much of that off the floor, but we do have on our second level specifically, and in the tot spot for very young children, three and under, we have some interactives that are kind of cool.
Right. So when did the Children's Museum come to downtown?
I'm sorry?
When did the Children's Museum come to downtown?
It was 17 years ago past month, so 2003. Right. And a group of visionaries started probably 20 years ago. And I think that from everything I've read, it was a group of moms and dads who wanted something for families.
Right.
I think the tech community, largely led by RIM at that time, BlackBerry, who wanted a quality of life to maintain and attract skilled workers for their growing business. And I think that was all encouraged along by the mayor of the day and the council of the day in downtown Kitchener, Carl Zera and team, to breathe some life into downtown Kitchener. So that all came together, and as I say, they raised $17 million.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody who's been to the museum, it's a glorious space. The atrium,
it is. Yeah, it is. And currently completely closed to walk-in visitors.
No. We are open. We were closed this weekend on Saturday because we hosted 7 weddings. We had a pop-up wedding day.
Okay, so that's not your typical museum offering.
No, and I learned today that we actually made the CTV National News. Somebody who worked, a colleague of mine that her folks wrote in Saskatchewan, they saw us on the news. But we had, beginning at 10 a.m. on Saturday until 8 p.m., we had a series of one-hour weddings, and it was very safe. I mean, I was there for 2 or 3 of them at the beginning, and things were sanitized in between, and the bubbles moved around depending on the number of chairs and so on, depending if they had 15 guests or what have you. And it was wonderful. I mean, the people were so thrilled to be able to come together and share the expenses. So they had somewhat of a classy wedding than they might have on their own.
Right.
So we were closed on Saturday, but we are open Friday, Saturday, and Sundays. And again, a lot of activity online.
Right. And typically people come in to see specific exhibits that you have on the go that particular time?
Yes. We closed in March of this year. The two previous years, we were on a real growth spurt. Our earned revenue was up $200,000 the previous year, and this March when we closed, we were outpacing that year. So we were seeing a lot of different demographics. We were seeing families for sure. We have 55 and better Fridays now, and that's free for those 55 and older with some cool programming, and they can do that in person or online. And we were really starting to attract the young, the millennials, the tech workers, and that sort of thing. And we continue to see that as sort of a date thing. Couples are coming in now to see the exhibits that we have, and certainly the young families and our members.
And so today the exhibits are no longer aimed at children.
No, there are 4 floors there, plus the lower level, which is the maker space, the underground studio, as we call it. So there is something for all stages of life, for sure. And while there's always something for families, we'll always try to keep the mix that there's something for everybody.
Right. Current exhibit is Alarm.
Yeah, we were really pleased. We pulled this together, and we had actually 4 separate exhibits under the banner of Alarm, responding to our climate emergency. And anybody who's driven past the museum has seen the 40-by-60-foot banner of our bee friend laying on his side. And it's kind of powerful to see that single image that brings something. It's like the poppy for Remembrance Day. It just brings back so much, that simple single little image. But we're now down to 2 of them. We had Spectrum, which was more of an immersive experience up in the shops of Waterloo Town Square. And then we had something on frogs, living frogs and habitats, which they've now left as of Labor Day. And then we have 2 still there, sort of the anchor exhibit, which is 10 women artists from around the world and their take on climate emergency through art and technology at play. And then the final one, the 4th one, is 2 local photographers who happened, went to the Arctic and one to the Antarctic, and captured some amazing photography of melting ice and so on. So, yeah, it's really great. It's really important. It's an important exhibit, and it kind of got shortened because of us having to close, but it's still there until January.
Okay. And other exhibits that you have on the go, something called Land Back Camp.
Yeah, I was delighted that the community that's now in Victoria Park has the Land Back Camp group approached us with photography of life at the camp. And it's a series of photos of individuals, and it's beautiful. The photography is really well done, and every picture tells a story. Mm-hmm. Is that Rod Stewart? I don't know. Somebody said that before me.
I'm sure somebody said it before Rod Stewart too.
Yeah, and so it's really, really, it's really important. It's an important message for all of our visitors, and And, you know, I always think about change comes from children. And so I think it's really important that parents experience that with their children and explain what's going on and the importance of what they're seeing.
Right. And the last thing that I see on the list here is beauty in Islamic art.
Yeah, we're delighted to be connected with the Muslim community. We actually were honored with an award a few weekends ago, and it's their highest award for friendship. And we've worked with them for, I think this is the fourth exhibition that we've had. I tend to think it's maybe the best. I mean, they've all been very good, and the artists are all very great. But this one just seems to have taken it to a new level. And it again, it's we're a community stage in part. There's different things that we offer. But that, again, showing not the differences in culture, but the similarities in culture to people, and especially to our youth, so that they grow up in a better world or create a better world.
So each of these exhibits is taking place on a different level within the museum.
Yeah, and they and it's and then the underground studio, the makerspace, as I say, has activity from time to time as well. So
tell me about that, because that's something that's, you know, underground. It's hidden. I don't think I've ever heard of that.
Yeah, it's in terms of our not-for-profit organization, you know, we have a large amount of earned revenue percentage-wise that we need to chase each year. Mm-hmm. So when we want to do a new initiative like the Underground Studio, and that began, I believe it was 3 years ago, possibly four, I've never seen us raise money more quickly than for that STEAM programming. And it's something as we look to expand, and that it will be part of our expansion. And the reason that we raise the money so quickly is it's part of the DNA of this community. There's so many tech community or tech companies and so on that people wanted to support that and to support, again, young people learning to work with their hands and so on. So it's pretty exciting. There's 3D printers, there's sewing machines, there's the dirty room with all the saws and the sawdust, there's soldering, and there's 30 laptops where people can build things and deconstruct things. It's a great space.
You said STEAM.
STEAM.
Yes.
STEAM programming.
Yes. Can you expand on STEAM?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And the A has been sometimes added. It's been added recently, a couple of years ago.
I like it there.
And I do think that all of those things are pulled together at some level with creativity and art and so on. As I say, the expanded museum that we are working toward now, having STEAM as a basis of what we do. And it also goes back to the museum, the Children's Museum. Their motto that they had when they first opened was art and technology at play. And I love that. I think it's something that we try to stay close to. And I think there's a lot of examples that we can point to.
Yeah. I've heard it said that if you get a room full of engineers and mathematicians together, you'll have enough people there for a couple of pickup bands.
There you go.
There's a definite intersection between arts, music, and technology and math.
Absolutely, yeah. That's great.
I think we should listen to a little bit more music.
Okay.
I would like to play something from Chelsea Danfield, who is a local artist. She's actually a scientist herself, doing something in the field of psychology or neurology or something like that, but is a country music singer. So I'd like to put that on, and then we'll come back.
Perfect. My boots on.
wheelchair. Like a bat out of hell, we'll get out of here. Won't see it coming if we sneak up from behind. Blow it up like old John Wayne. Hover like we've gone insane. Bet your ass we'll make it out alive. Cause I'm a cowboy. Dig your spurs into that Bronco and let's ride. Damned if I'll be going out like this.
No, it doesn't get any more country and western than that. Chelsea Danfield from Waterloo, Cowboy from her album, Cowboy. She was working on another album, but apparently COVID has interfered, and so that's a little bit on hold. Hope to have Chelsea in the studio one of these days, maybe even for a live in-studio performance. Those are always good.
Yeah.
Have David Marskell in the studio, David from the Museum. And I say the Museum, and in my mind, it's a capital T, little H-E, with a space, and then a capital M and little Museum on the end of that. But that's not how the branding of the Museum is.
No. So we've always had the word museum in our name, the Waterloo Region Children's Museum. Mm-hmm. And when we planned to rebrand, it was coincident with the Titanic exhibit that we had. And we were looking for the right name and so on, and we didn't want Exploratorium or something like that that sounded a little bit maybe still a children's museum. We wanted something that was broader in its appeal. And about that time, the Waterloo Region, like Dune Crossroads, mm-hmm. added the word museum, just after we had rebranded to the Museum. So we had to scramble and go with the big M in our advertising to try to differentiate. And I think that's kind of settled down now. But the use of the Museum was somewhat tongue-in-cheek. And it was a little bit ballsy and a little bit out there that we would be the Museum and we don't even have a collection. And so it was just an extension of our attitude and our sort of being mavericks a little bit. And so we had some fun with that. When we went to the province of Ontario to register the name, they wouldn't accept it. They said, you have to be a museum of something. And we said, well, that's kind of the point. We don't want to be pigeonholed. We are not a museum of one thing. We have so many different things. We've had exhibits with Yoko Ono, and we've had the Titanic, and we've done activity with Bob Marley, and we brought rock carvings from China. We're not a museum of anything, but they told us we had to be. So we are officially the Museum of Ideas Transcending Objects, which came out fairly quickly because of our sort of our festival strategy that we aspire to with every exhibit that we do.
The Museum of Transcending Objects. Sounds mystical.
Ideas Transcending Objects.
Ideas Transcending Objects. Well,
yeah,
that sounds like a great marketing phrase right there. But you've got the Museum all jammed together, all uppercase letters.
Yeah.
And that must give you some difficulty in correspondence and in just establishing, the logo, the image, the word mark.
Yeah, for sure. The as I say, there was some confusion at the beginning when we did the museum. We dropped the word children's, and then the region added the word museum. There was clearly confusion. I think we've distanced that now. The M was an important important strategy on our part. They've added the word Ken Sealing now, so that I think that part's gone. our challenges with the media, actually, and style books that are frustrating. I mean, the local, certain media, nationally as well, they use we, the organization, which is a stylized version of we, word, and they use it uppercase, and that's not an issue. They use Toronto Stock Exchange, spelling it with an X as uppercase. To me, that's not a proper anagram. And, you know, even BMO is putting a B from bank. And so, you know, I've lost that battle with certain groups, but we're really pleased. CTV tends to use it. The Toronto Star, the Globe and Mail, they've used it one word uppercase. So whenever we see it online or with a media organization, we always have a little cheer.
I will do my best.
Thank you.
Of course, on radio, you can't really tell how it appears in my That's head right. when I say the word, the museum.
Well, I'll know from now on.
So you've been with the museum since 2006.
Yeah, my anniversary actually is around coming up, October 30th.
Happy anniversary in advance.
Thank you very much.
Where'd you come from?
I was kicking around Toronto. I was director of marketing at Exhibition Place for 12 years and sort of drove the annual C&E. I was in charge of the communication and marketing and the larger programs, the air show, reported to me some of the special events that the big events, the themes that we would be able to market. And that was wonderful. It was 12 years of creativity and trying to draw 2 million people over 18 days and just pray it didn't rain. And pray it didn't rain, especially on Labor Day weekend with the air show, we would do a third of our business. So that was fun, and we would market everything from agriculture to the food building to the midway to feature countries and so on. And I really, really enjoyed my time there. When I left there, I had kind of gotten to the best C&E I could help with in one particular year. And that included, I had attracted Disney to do a stage show, daily event on our band shell. And I ended up working for Disney for a year over the millennium. We were trying to, my role in Canada was to help drive tourism to Disneyland in Florida or Disney World in from the west coast of Canada. So that was fun to see how they, talking about brands, how they protect their brand and so on. And then I went over to Ontario Place and I brought in a Chinese Lantern Festival, which actually was at a time when SARS had hit in Toronto, and the Chinese community was feeling it because people had stopped going to Chinatown, stopped going to restaurants, and there was an issue with people, and so I saw something in New York City that had an artist had created the gates, and these were saffron colored cloth that went for kilometers, or I guess miles in the States, through the Central Park. And I thought, this is what the Ontario Place needs, something big, grandiose. And so I started to work with somebody, ended up with working with a professor in China. We ended up bringing the rock carvings from China, I'm sorry, the Chinese Lantern Festivals from China to Ontario Place. And it helped bring the two communities, the general population and the Chinese community together. So that was a huge success, and a search firm, I got on their radar, and they brought me to Kitchener.
And you came to Kitchener, and now you're the CEO, Chief Executive Officer.
I am.
Chief Exhibits Officer, perhaps.
Yeah, and, well, don't tell Laurel that.
There's a huge staff at the museum. I'm looking at the Meet Our Staff page, and it's huge.
Yeah, there's... We have cut back recently. There's probably 17 full-time people now and virtually no part-time people. Compared to the clay and glass or KWAG or something like that, we have a lot of staff. But when you compare us to something that we're more comparable to, and that is more of a for-profit entity, or Bingman's even, I mean, Bingman's has community stage, they have a family activity, they have cultural activity, you need more staff. And the other thing is, we almost have a night shift. I mean, the weddings is one example that, that, you know, we went all day with those weddings, And we have, in normal times, events in the evening. We have well over 200 events after we close, like in the evenings, whether we produce them or their rental community events. Mm. So we need staff in the evenings as well as in the daytime. And we're approaching 100,000 visitors. And so,
it's 100,000 visitors a year.
Yeah.
Yes.
Annually. So, yeah, I mean, some would say we have a lot of staff and we're as lean as we can be and still working towards breaking even as a not-for-profit.
And this year's pandemic is going to definitely cut into your ability to keep staff, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, the federal government has really helped to allow us to keep the core together, because we can't give up and we need to plan for the future.
Yes.
And a lot of what we've done, not just the online and the off-site, but technology is so important to what we're going to do now and what we're going to do forever. And that, I've been saying to people, never waste a good pandemic. And we've learned things. Somebody else said it in a different way. They said, this year is going to move innovation ahead by a decade.
Oh, yes.
And it's true. I mean, there are things that we're doing now that we wouldn't have thought about if it hadn't have been for the pandemic. And so we're embracing those and chasing those. So we need that core staff to prepare for that. And to we've just announced an arrangement with Desire to Learn, local, global company.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wonderful to work with. And they have a platform called Bright Space, which is approved by many school boards, including the Ministry of Education mm-hmm. for Ontario. So all school boards here, but they work all over the world. So now we can send curriculum all over the world, and we can partner with a science center in Florida and bring curriculum to our community and work with the Northwest Territories. And so we wouldn't have thought of that. We wouldn't have taken that risk in normal circumstances. We would have let the school buses roll, and we would have marketed towards schools in a different way or in the same way. That takes me to another phrase that I used to say at the CNE: if it's not broke, break it. And when you put it back together, if it's the same and it still works, great. But
then you had it right in the first place.
And you had it right, but maybe you'll find something that you can do differently.
Right. Yeah, I can see that happening here at the radio station too, where we've developed a bunch of new technology to let people work remotely. And you're absolutely right. It's the pandemic has been great for advancement in technology and in just how operations work. I guess whatever you've lost locally, you'll be able to make up for globally, because you're probably drawing a lot more visitors across the globe now with online exhibits.
Absolutely. And I don't know that we're getting global just yet, but that's certainly part of our overall strategies, is we want to be known for world-class activities and so on. And that's just one example, working with Bright Space and D2L. We need to do that, and there's no reason why we can't support, as I say, students in Nunavut or the Northwest Territories, and take them curriculum and content that they would not have received, and all at the same time as making sure that we all inspire and enlighten our own students in our own region.
Right. So D2L is providing the technology or providing curriculum, and you're providing a component of that?
So it's a partnership that mm-hmm. We now have access to their platform. The school board, the two local school boards have participated to help us invest in this. And so we will now provide content. We normally would have 28 curriculum programs off the shelf that when the school buses rolled, we could deliver. Now we're transitioning those to online and as I say, working with Alarm, the climate exhibit that I mentioned, we're partnering with the Science Center in St. Petersburg, Florida, and they've got something right now on rising waters, which is a concern to them.
Yes,
bang on with our conversation, our narrative of climate. So we're going to be streaming that to the students here. So, never waste a good pandemic.
Absolutely, yeah. And I suppose that with this new technology, you've had to purchase, more capital equipment to make all this happen.
Absolutely. We've had to invest. We've had to invest carefully and wisely in that and build out, P&L's, profit and loss budgets to know that we will get it back. And I mentioned earlier, you know, we take risks, and not-for-profits need to be able to take risks. Now, it's scary out there because we don't have safety nets. I mean, if Exxon takes a risk or some large corporation take a risk, they've got, you know, money in the bank. So we've got to be very careful with our investments and our risk taking. But it's the only way that we can grow and be relevant I mean, being relevant is really what it's all about.
So how does revenue break down? I mean, there's some from ticket sales and entry fees.
Yeah. So in any given year, we have to earn revenue of about 73-74%, which is not normal. The other museums, it's almost reverse of the average of Canada. I was on the Canadian Museum Association Board of Directors, and on average, most museums receive funding up to about 70%, and then they have to earn the balance through ticket sales and merchandise and that type of thing. We have to earn 70%.
How did that happen?
When the Children's Museum opened, it was believed that RIM was going to be there to support it forever, I believe is how it happened. There was very little money at the time from the municipalities. There was $45,000 from the region when I arrived, and that was it. And our heating bill is three times that. And,
wow.
The region and the cities have you know, started to come to the table, if you will, and to help us. And they see what we're doing and the economic impact that we're having for downtown and for the restaurants and so on. And it's also fragile. It was before the pandemic, and now it's even going to get more scary for small businesses downtown.
Yeah. Yeah. So not a great deal of grant money coming from the federal government or the provincial government. It's all municipal money?
That so sounds odd. Of our budgets of 2.2 million, we receive about give or take 600,000 municipally, largely from the region, and we are not eligible federally or provincially because we're a square hole round peg. We aren't deemed to be a museum because we don't have a collection, yet we have, you know, artifacts constantly. We have and we're not deemed to be an art gallery, even though we have the several that we mentioned earlier in the show. They're both seeing us as unique and that we're relevant to 100,000 people. So they're looking at us trying to figure out what this new unique type of emerging museum thing is. So we've just got to stay on our feet and keep swinging and do cool things and work with the drive-through dinosaur show this weekend, starting this weekend and so on.
Yeah, I can see other museums wanting to fill in that what I think is a gap in their offerings. You know, if they're not doing the interactive things, if they're not constantly changing over their offerings, and they're missing out on a good portion of people that might come in.
Yeah, and then, you know, they all do really great work, but I don't envy them having to take care of a collection of shoes or a collection of China or a collection of, I mean, I've forgotten the percentage. It's incredibly low that the Royal Ontario Museum at any given time has something like 6% of their collection on display.
Right.
The rest of it has to be taken care of and hermetically sealed and, you know, the heat and temperature or the humidity and temperature and so on have to be controlled. That's expensive.
Yeah.
I don't envy that for them. So, and then for them to be relevant, they have to sort of ignore that and add new activities and so on. And many of them are doing well. I mean, if I can just run on that one for a second,
sure.
I really think the successful museums, art galleries, restaurants, businesses generally, I think in arts and culture for us, for anybody to aspire to replace what we had is making a terrible mistake. And that's a spiral that is not a good thing. We need to aspire to something new and different. If it's not broken, break it and take a look at it and come out the other side as a new organization. And You know, for us to have gone back and said, okay, well, we'll just roll school buses again, that costs tens of thousands of dollars in part-time staffing to right. deliver that program, and now we don't have that. So it's, you know, that's just a little example.
Yeah. I think my head is exploding. So that's a lot of ideas and numbers and figures from the numbers that we were talking about, the money we talked about. So I think I need some more music.
Okay, let's do it.
This is Jacob Bradshaw, another local artist, his first release here in the Waterloo region. And something I want to talk to you about, too, is using the space as an arts forum. But first, we'll listen to Jacob Bradshaw.
Perfect.
That is Jacob Bradshaw. He wrote to us at office@radiowaterloo.ca. Hello, my name is Jacob Bradshaw, and I'm a new young artist out of the Waterloo region. I just released my first ever song entitled Heal Your Soul and would like to submit it for consideration. It's a smooth, soothing R&B pop song with intimate vocals and lyrics, 80s type instrumentation, and an overall immersive soundscape that is supposed to be reminiscent of the 80s cafe empty mall date. Can't say I can identify with that. So it's in our rotation, it's in our digital library, and it will be played frequently, I think, in our Canadian content, KW content stuff. In the studio today, we have David Marskall from The Museum. One word, all capital letters, no spaces. And you've got a bit of a musical connection. You said you have a son who plays music.
Yes, the Darcys. The Darcys. Wes and Jason, they met in grade 4 or some such thing, and Jason is like another son to us. And they have always had a dream of playing music, and they've had several iterations of names and so on. But the Darcys really took off about a decade ago, nominated for Juno a couple times. And they as I was saying off air, the show business is two words, and it's great to see their creativity on stage, mm-hmm. but that it's a lot of hard work for. The musician was just playing. He's got to send you emails, and he's got to work to get his airtime and so on. So, good for all the creativity in our music and locally, there's a huge amount of music and history in this community, as I'm finding out.
Yeah, it's amazing how much local music there is. If we wanted to, I think we could probably play nothing but local music and Canadian content music you know, all week long. And I encourage anybody who's listening, if you've got some music sitting there on a tape, on a CD, on an MP3 file someplace, send it to us, office@radiowaterloo.ca. Somebody will go through that. Somebody from the music committee will go through all those emails. And we get, you know, a lot in a day. And I was just scraping through our barrel, not even hitting the bottom yet, but messages a year old. So don't be discouraged if you don't get a reply immediately. Send it to us anyway, and somebody will get to it eventually. Something about the structure of the museum. Can you tell me how it's set up? It's a nonprofit.
Yeah, we're a charity and not-for-profit. We have a board of directors. We just recently had our annual general meeting and had a call for directors and so on. We're pleased that we've moved the dial with people applying to be on our board to represent minorities and so on. So that's terrific. We're still not approaching the 23-25% to reflect the population, but mm-hmm. We're up to about 15 or 18%, something like that. So that's good. Really stellar group of people, by the way. It's all on the museum.ca. You can see the full list and so on in there. And there's three major committees that come out of them, and that the young team that I support work with the board. It's a great organization, and the space is so creative, and just walking in, the wow factor when you see it. So it's a wonderful place to be.
How can people get involved?
The museum.ca, you'll see info at the museum.ca. Take a look there. There's all sorts of places for us in terms of volunteering and other ad hoc committees around marketing, curriculum, and so on and so forth. It's very exciting, and we're all just gearing up for our big blockbuster coming in a year from now that I hope everybody's been hearing about, and we'll be announcing ticket sales in another less than a month.
Tell us about it.
The Rolling Stones exhibition, Unzipped.
Unzipped.
UnzippedKW.ca. We're just thrilled to have bested...
You've got a whole website for this.
Toronto and other major cities in Canada. We're the only Canadian stop, the exclusive stop for the Rolling Stones World Tour of this show. It's been in Tokyo, it's been in London, England, it's been in New York City, it's been in Sydney, Australia, and oh my God, it's coming to Kitchener.
In a month?
The ticket sales are in a month. It comes in 13 months from now, so hopefully we'll all be safe and COVID days will be behind us. But we've planned, in case there's still an issue, of you know, people can get their full money refunded and so on. But tickets go on sale this November 2nd. It's 10,000 square feet. It will consume our building. all of the young musicians you're just talking about, I really hope that we can somehow offer a stage to them. I mean, part of the festival strategy, as we call it, the ideas beyond the objects, transcending the objects, we want to make sure that anybody touching the musical world in this community has an opportunity to take advantage of this. This is world class, and it's going to bring tens of thousands of people to our community. So really hopeful that everybody will take advantage of it, and that it helps the museum for years to come and puts us all on a much larger cultural map.
Yeah. You said you're inviting musicians to the stage. Is there going to be musical performances? Will there be musical performances in this?
Yes. So we're working toward that right now. We're hopeful that we can partner with groups like the Conrad Center for Performing Arts right beside us to be able to do just that, to have opportunity. I use the word stage in the largest sense, that we are a stage for the community.
Right.
But we do have a stage, like minor stages on throughout the building. But we're working with everyone from Maxwell's to Ethel's to Center in the Square already to partner with them and their stages to really showcase music in this community. It's so rich, what the history and, you know, the American Woman riff that was created in Waterloo, and the trailer for Sailor Rent that was written in a hotel downtown Kitchener, perhaps the Walper, and all the stories in between. It's really rich.
So this is not going to consume just the museum, but all of KW.
I hope so, and I hope others make a lot of money from this and benefit from this this feel-good show that's about to be unleashed on our community.
So I can't imagine what sort of stuff will be there. I mean, is it going to be Keith's used guitar strings?
Well, it will be Keith's guitars. There's a section of guitars, collection of guitars. There's a recreation of the first apartment they lived in Chelsea in the UK, in England, which looks kind of like my children's bedrooms when they were in their late teens. If you can imagine the Rolling Stones living together. And there's costume. Like, the Rolling Stones have had such a huge influence, not just on music, but on influence on fashion and film. So it touches on a lot of things. The grand finale is a 16-minute experience of their show in Havana a few years ago, which will be wonderful, and some of the Dolby sound and some of the speakers and technology that's going to be used to bring it to life. It's going to be terrific. So it's a real experience, and we've got working with the Rolling Stones management and the band's manager now. I've met we're working on all sorts of things that we'll be announcing along the way.
I can just imagine.
Yeah.
I know that the Rolling Stones are really popular here in Southern Ontario. You know, they've toured here. They've used, you know, Toronto as a staging area to kick off tours. So
yeah, they really do have an affinity, and they actually, again, back to SARS, they did SARS stock in 2003. As a gift to the city to help with the economic downfall that we all were going through at the time, and to help reboot the economy. In some ways, they're going to help this community with Unzipped. I mean, that's going to help downtown Kitchener and the businesses and restaurants with tens of thousands of people. The show is going to the Netherlands soon, and their tickets went on sale last Thursday. They sold out the first 2 months in 2 days.
Oh, my goodness.
And again, that's tens of thousands of people coming from outside the community that are going to stay in the hotels here and eat at the restaurants and listen to this radio station.
So you're, oh, yes.
Yeah.
We don't actually have a lot of Rolling Stones music in our library. And so, you know, we probably have to gear up for that in the coming couple of months.
Yeah. There must be covers of Canadian bands that have done some covers and stuff.
Yeah. You know, I can just imagine playing a whole hour of Can't Get No Satisfaction, all done by different people, and just, you know, doing some comparative musicology. I love doing that.
The
differences, you know, remixes and mashups and cover versions. It's just, it's a great way of really immersing yourself in that sort of thing.
Let us know if you do that. We'll add it to our festival strategy website on the Unzipped.
May just happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that we encourage here at Community Radio.
Yeah.
How do you get a hold of people like that? How do you get in touch to make this happen?
I think when we first got to Yoko Ono, for example, she, I think it was easier for her to say yes than to put up with the relentless emails. And the Rolling Stones, the management was asked by a reporter, how did Kitchener beat out Vancouver and Toronto and whatever? And they said they really wanted it. They showed us they really wanted this exhibition. And it's just our tonight, you know, we were tenacious and, yes, and we want it for this community. It's a deserving community and we're not a B city. This will move us to an A minus city, I hope.
An A minus city. I know that's something to aspire to. Got a favorite? Got a favorite Stones tune?
So many, and I've seen them a lot, but I've got to think Gimme Shelter is very high on my list.
Gimme Shelter?
It was my telephone ring for a while.
Okay, it's paying royalties by the ringtone.
Right.
David Marskall, thank you ever so much for coming into the studio and talking about all kinds of stuff that, you know, I never thought would happen at a museum, but I guess it's not your typical museum.
No.
Yeah. No.
Thank you very, very much.
I hope we can collaborate on this stuff in the upcoming few months, the upcoming year, because this is pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's going to be good.
Thank you, David. Let's go out on a high note with Gimme Shelter by the Rolling Stones on CKMS Community Connections. Rolling Stones and Gimme Shelter on CKMS Community Connections, which is produced by Radio Waterloo, sponsored by RadioWaterloo.ca. It's produced by Jennifer Strong. Associate producers are James Jordan, Jeff Stager, and Dylan Bravener. My name is Bob Jonkman. CKMS Community Connections airs every Monday at 11 and on Fridays at, noon, I think, 12 o'clock noon on a Saturday. Come join us again next week. See you then.